KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
Thanks for joining us this morning. We're excited to have another very special guest with us today. And as always, Mary has the introductions.
Well, we are very excited to have a top dog this year with us, and that is Dr. Richard Witten. He is the top dog for the College of Science and Mathematics. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Glad to be here.
So nice to meet you. Thanks for taking time out of your Sunday to be with us.
And Julie, he gave me permission to call him Rick.
I heard that.
Yes, so I'm not being too informal, but I want to make you as comfortable as possible. I know you have a very busy schedule, and I'm excited to get a chance to talk with you and to share your story with our listeners. First of all, how do they notify you that you're a top dog?
Jackie Glazner called me and said, are you sitting down? And I said, yes. And she said, well, you're a top dog this year. And I said, funny story. Yeah, right. And next thing I know, she said, no, really, really. And that's how I found out.
Oh, that's exciting. You know, I was wondering if they send you an official notice or how it happens. And I think for some people, sometimes there's a message left or they might have a clue. But it sounds like it wasn't something that was on your radar.
Not at all.
Those are the best kind of surprises.
I was actually on the Alumni Association board for a few years, and I was on the selection committee at one point for the Alumni Association. And so I knew how the process went, but I never dreamed that I was part of the process.
Well, that's a tough choice to make. You know, there are so many fantastic people that have been associated with the campus. I would not want to have the burden of trying to choose who gets to be the top dog each year. But how long did you serve on that board?
I think something like 8 years.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So you started out here at Fresno State, and you're from Fresno?
I graduated from Fresno High.
Class of
60. Go Warriors.
You mentioned that you knew Julie's dad, too.
Yeah, he was a Spanish teacher, and I took some Spanish, but I took it from the other guy.
The other guy. So why did you choose to start here at Fresno State?
Well, to be honest, most of my friends were going here, my high school friends, and I had applied to several different campuses and had actually been accepted at Berkeley, but I just didn't feel like I wanted to go there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came out with all my buddies and we goofed around for a year and then we got serious.
Well, that's good that you knew that you needed that time to transition, and especially if you're going to go from the Valley to Berkeley. And at the time that you were in Berkeley, that was quite an adjustment for you. Tell me, what was that experience like when you arrived on the Cal campus?
Well, when I arrived, it was really nice and quiet, and it was a little bit foggy, and I just really liked that, and it all looked really cool. And that was 1963, and things got a little hairy after that. And my last 2 years there were pretty steady. There were always a lot of highway patrol and so forth on campus, a lot of riots and demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during the free speech movement. So it was pretty wild times. And of course, there was a lot of Vietnam War protests going on, too, during that time.
While you were there, they had a humanities program that you were a part of?
Yeah, they called it the humanities field major, and it was a major designed to, I think, mostly train people that were going to go into education. But I had an excellent humanities program at Fresno High under Alan Amond. It stimulated my interest in trying to learn as much as I could about just about everything. And so I saw that major was available up there and took advantage of it. As it was, it turned out to be a very popular major for me when I was applying for medical schools because at that time anyway, medical schools in general were trying to avoid loading themselves up with people that were strictly microbiologists and all that kind of thing. They wanted more well-rounded, I think was the term they used to use. And so it actually turned out to be an advantage for me getting into medical school.
And being in the Bay Area, studying humanities, you had access to a lot of the arts and different types of things that you could be exposed to that you might not have been able to get in another setting in that type of intensity during that time that you were there.
Yeah, we had many of my professors were really well known outside the university. So it was a very good experience.
That's fantastic. And from there, you went on to UC San Francisco to get your medical degree. And I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm a very skittish person with anything that has to do with my eyes. So I don't even understand how people can put in and remove contacts. It freaks me out if I see someone do it. So I admire anyone who is able to treat people who have eye issues. It's so important for quality of life. And through what you've been able to do, you traveled around the world, basically, providing services to other countries. What was it about ophthalmology that intrigued you and made you want to focus on that?
My father was an ophthalmologist, and so I was very familiar with the terminology. Going through medical school, I didn't think of ophthalmologists as being real doctors. You know, we never took anybody's clothes off or listened to their heart or any of that kind of stuff. And so I really wasn't interested in ophthalmology per se going through medical school. But then I had a 2-week ophthalmology rotation. And my gosh, they just reinforced me so much because I knew all these terms and everything. And it really stood out to them as somebody that had potential. Then I saw that ophthalmologists were really making a much bigger difference in people's lives than most other specialties. And so it just sort of fell into me by my 4th year of medical school. That's where I wanted to do.
When you were able to really delve into it and learn more about the way that it helps people to live, did that give you a different type of reflection and respect on your dad for him being in that field?
Sure. Yeah. An interesting story. He was in the Army during the Korean War, and he had me come in and watch him do some surgery at the Army base. And I was just this little 8-year-old kid, and I was standing on a stool, and they put a surgical gown and cap and mask and everything and put me on a stool looking down over the field. And he was treating some guy that had been injured seriously. And so he had to give him some local anesthetic shots around the eye. And that's the last thing I remember. I was told that a nurse caught me just before I landed on the, on the surgical field. When I woke up, I was out in the reception area and being fanned and talked to gently. And that was my first and last exposure to surgery until I actually got into my 3rd year of medical school.
So even with that experience, it didn't intimidate you enough to where you didn't want to do it yourself?
Frankly, I was a little intimidated. And fortunately, in ophthalmology, you spend a lot of your time in the clinic, and there wasn't any of that kind of stuff going on. So I sort of worked my way into it that way.
And then you did an internship in Oakland. How long was your internship there?
That's just a 1-year program.
1 year.
That was what they called in those days a rotating internship. So I had some surgery, OB, psychiatry, internal medicine, I don't know, a bunch of stuff. You know, they give you 2 months of 6 different specialties, and that further solidified my interest in ophthalmology, especially at Highland Hospital in Oakland, which I understand is still a pretty wild place.
Did you see a lot of injuries there?
Oh, yeah. We called it the Knife and Gun Club. It was
Oh my goodness.
It was pretty wild. Good medical experience.
But, yes, because you were constantly seeing a variety of injuries.
Yeah.
Then tell me about how there was a program that you participated in to where you served 2 years in the Navy.
Yeah, this was towards the end of the Vietnam War, but back in those days, they still had the draft. And you could get a deferment. It was called a Berry Plan. You could get deferred for the duration of a residency program if you committed to 2 years of active duty in that specialty after you got out. And that was a lucky thing. Ophthalmology was extremely popular, and they actually chose the people who were able to get the deferment under the Berry Plan by lottery. And
oh my goodness.
I've not ever won anything in a lottery other than a Berry Plan deferment.
You won that, right? And what type of injuries did you see there that you had not already experienced in your residency?
One of the nice things about Oak Knoll Naval Hospital, it was a converted country club. during World War II, and is a very nice place to work. Had great tennis courts and everything. And
good stress relievers.
It was, we were treating some people who had been transferred out of Vietnam, but for the most part, those people had already been taken care of, and we were just doing kind of cleanup work, and we treated a lot of retired military.
So another thing that you have dedicated quite a bit of your time to is providing free eye care in different developing countries. Tell me about some of your trips, and if you have a case that particularly sticks in your mind, you probably have several, but I understand going the first time, but what would make you want to continue to keep going into these countries? What do you commonly see there?
My wife and I, pretty much on a lark, went to Ecuador in 1984, 85, something like that. And there was an ophthalmologist from the Bay Area who actually was a medical school classmate of my dad's, who had been going down there for a couple of years on his own and taking some friends with him and just sort of doing an informal makeshift kind of clinic. His kids were doing summer work with an organization called Amigos de las Americas, which takes high school and college students, and they do kind of Peace Corps type projects during their summer vacations. And his kids were involved in that, so he went down with them and saw the need, and so he did what he could while they were down there, and he died suddenly the year after we were with him in Ecuador. And so a group of us that had been with him and his widow and his children met at their home in Hillsboro and said, we've got to keep this going. And this was just, there was too much opportunity here for making a difference. And so we incorporated Vision Health International at that point, and we've stayed active with them ever since.
So you and Kay were founding members?
Yes, we were on the founding board. She's a registered surgical nurse, and so she was very active with the nursing end of it, and I became the medical director of it. And
what a great partnership.
it's a national organization now, and so our board is all over the place. We were doing initially one project a year, initially 2 weeks at a time. They now do 5 or 6 one-week projects all over Latin America. And the thing that kept us going back is just the fact that we could go in, a team could go into an area with good planning, and each of us doctors, we'd usually have 3 or 4 ophthalmologists, could make as big a difference in lives in that 1 week as we could in our private practices in a year.
Oh, my goodness.
Because we were taking totally blind people and young enough to be working, who couldn't work, and getting them back in supporting their family.
What a gift.
And that's what kept us coming back.
Yes.
I've retired from surgery now, so I haven't been on any projects lately, but I'm still on the board.
And you also would go to Poland, too.
We had an interesting opportunity. A friend of ours, Polish-born anesthesiologist, still had family over there. And so he arranged us to go there right after the Berlin Wall came down. And we saw Eastern Europe in transition. It was pretty exciting.
You have been at some pretty memorable times in history, in the thick of it. What is the reaction of the patients or the patients' families when you go on those trips and you get to give them back the gift of sight?
Hugs and kisses.
I would imagine so. And you probably receive a lot of home-cooked meals.
Oh, yeah. And lots of little googah things that are all over our shelves at home.
Oh, well, I can't imagine what if one of my children had that and someone came and out of the goodness of their heart was able to have the talent to restore that to them and make that difference in their life. What do you give to say thank you? How can you say thank you? Sure. So, you know, thank you from all of them for doing that and for stepping up at a time when that organization could have easily just not existed if it wasn't for you and Kay and for the other members who decided that it was up to you to keep it going. And I guess that's what makes a top dog, someone who steps up when they see that there's a need. And you mentioned Kay, and I have to tell you that Kay has one of the most beautiful smiles of anybody I have ever met. She is so engaging. She is such a lovely person, and I feel fortunate that I've been able to get to know her. And just thinking of the partnership the two of you have with serving others, it's wonderful when you get to share that with your spouse. And you have two daughters. You have Colleen, who's in Seattle, and Kirsten, that's in Santa Cruz, and three grandbabies.
Well, they're not exactly babies anymore.
But how often do you get to spend time with them?
Actually, for about the last 5 years or so, we have been spending a week out of every month over at Santa Cruz. We have a condominium over there. The family got it many years ago. And so we get to see the Santa Cruz too very frequently, although they're now 18 and 16 and are developing other interests.
Oh, boy.
But the Seattle one, it's much less frequent, but it's a two-hour flight. So they're coming down for the Top Dog event. And
they're going to be so proud.
Yeah.
What type of activities do you like to do when you're in Santa Cruz?
Read.
Yes, one of my favorites, too.
Walk the dog.
Uh-huh. And you were telling me that your dog has you pretty well trained to spoil it. So
Rocky he owns us, and he shares us with other people reluctantly and occasionally.
Oh, my goodness.
He's 14.
So you and Kay have been very involved with Fresno State. And when we hear of all the places you've been and of the different universities that you've been affiliated with UC Berkeley and UC San Francisco, and just the commitment that you've had to serving, you have been very involved here at Fresno State. You came back home to Fresno and you have been very involved. You've served on the Fresno State Alumni Association's board of directors. You were part of the Capital Campaign Development Committee and also the Fresno State Foundation Board of Governors. What is it about Fresno State that makes you want to be involved at that level?
Well, basically, I think that if people who are able to support institutions, whether it be the college or the symphony, which my wife's very involved with, or mm-hmm. the arts, or anything that enhances the community, I look at as an asset that is worth supporting. Mm-hmm. And if the university were strictly a diploma factory that cranked out people thanks to government subsidies, it just wouldn't be the real asset that it is.
You're right.
The fact that the university attracts not just students who are given opportunities that they might otherwise not have, mm-hmm. but more importantly, it attracts faculty who become really important people in the community because of all their varied backgrounds and skills and everything.
Yes.
So I look at the university as a community asset, and that's my primary focus in dealing with these boards that I've been on.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, it's the same with Kay and the Philharmonic. If we didn't have a Philharmonic here, the community wouldn't be as nice as it is. And certainly that's true for Fresno State.
And there are so many rich experiences that exist here that are associated with the campus. And I think that your compassion and your desire to be a part of so many different types of things on campus, I mean, you support the President's Circle of Excellence and the Jordan College of Science and Technology and also many different scholarships. I think that goes back to the humanities. When you had that humanities upbringing to where it exposed you to things that you might not have thought about focusing on. But when you get a taste of a little bit of the arts and philosophy and you're able to be creative and see how that translates into serving others, it really makes for a much more rich experience.
One of the most fun parts I had of being on the alumni board was that I got to serve SMITCamp Honors Program selection committees.
Oh, yes.
And wow, every year I would get like, I don't know, 50 or 60 applications to review and then sit down in a committee and choose our selections from that. But just mm-hmm. seeing the quality of the people that were applying to that program made me see how really good a Fresno State student could be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason that we have endowed a couple of scholarships for that particular program, because I see the excellence at the top is what determines the ladder that everybody else is climbing. So
yes,
it encourages good faculty to come here when you have good students. And
right.
Good students teach and serve as role models for students that may not be quite at that level yet, but they can aspire to it. So excellence in the university is very important to me, and the university is an excellent part of the community.
And the cycle, like you said, that when you have positive momentum and you have people who are excited about being a part of it, it just keeps generating that magnetism that draws more people in. And the Smit Camp Scholars, that's one group that I am always impressed by them. And I get very excited when we get to meet the new freshmen that come in, because this is going to be our first year when we do our graduations in May that we will have been here for their whole time. So I remember when we started in 13 and we had the Smit Camp Scholars welcome reception, and they were telling us what they wanted to do with their lives. And each one that steps up there, you're thinking, wow, this kid is 18 and I feel like an underachiever compared to them. It's so fun to see the enthusiasm they have and the genuine belief and hope that they are going to make a difference, a positive difference in the world around them. And what I really like about it is that you see students who are interested in such a wide variety of subjects and ways of helping. And we've been able to get to know many of them personally, and I just get excited every year when you see the new group. And then when they graduate, to see where they're going. I've been able to stay in touch with a few of them that have graduated, and with other students too. But with the Smit Camp Scholars, I think it's because they go through that cohort experience. They develop the support system within their group that is a marker for success. And we have the Renaissance Scholars are also doing that. And we have some other scholarship programs that are trying to pattern after that. But I would not want to be trying to choose who to admit, because every one of them, when one steps up, you just are amazed at what they want to do and how talented they are. And then the next one steps up and you're just like, wow, wow, wow. And what I really like is that so many of them are from the Valley. So they are talent that we are able to keep here, educate here, and let them see the great difference that they can make in our community once they get their education.
It was interesting to see that occasionally in these packets of applications for the Smit Camp program, that you would occasionally see letters of recommendation from mm-hmm. their counselors that had been sent to Stanford, but somehow ended up in there or sent to Cal. And and yet they ended up at Fresno State by choice. And many of those students could not have gone to other universities for economic reasons, largely, but many of them could have gone anywhere. And because mm-hmm. the program was such a good program, that they decided to stay at Fresno State, and the school benefits from that big time.
So what do you have planned for your personal celebration for this top dog? I'm trying to imagine, what do you do when you're a top dog? How do you celebrate with your family?
Well, you know, we've got two tables worth of people, a cheering section.
Good deal.
And then probably, I guess, we'll go back over to the coast shortly afterwards. But it's pretty exciting.
Well, that's great. And I'm looking forward to meeting your family and hearing them cheer for you when you get your award. I know that it's going to be a little whirlwind here with they do videos and there's quite a lot of press that's going to happen. So thank you so much for taking the time to come and share with us this morning and to share your story. And thank you to you and Kay for your commitment to Fresno State and for making it a bigger and a bolder campus. We appreciate it. We know that you have a lot of options of ways that you could invest your time, and we are grateful that you do give as much as you do to Fresno State.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's great to meet you, and congratulations again.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, Fresno State 2016 Top Dog recipient from the College of Science and Mathematics, Dr. Richard Witten, and of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.